There we go. Okay. I get my notes up here. All right. So, welcome, welcome back. I missed you all. I have seen some of you at Art of Client Transformation and Sacred Power and some other places and online, and some of us have been in touch, and that always makes me really happy. For those of you that I haven't directly connected with in a couple of weeks, I'm so happy that you're here too, and I'm really looking forward to connecting today. This call is on logistics and systems and templates. So we're going to be looking at systems that you want to create before you start working with a client, systems to have in place while you're working with a client, and then systems for the end of a cycle with a client. It doesn't sound juicy, but the way that we're going to look at it, we're going to go deep and really get detailed, and also look at some, there are inner pieces that are involved in all of this that we'll be talking about. Before we get there, a couple of housekeeping pieces. So number one, kind of like the companion session to today's call is a recorded call with a guest expert that will be dropped in your member center probably sometime today. It's a call that Gina Shingle Jaffe did on legal aspects to be thinking about in the coaching industry. She's a lawyer and has worked specifically with people in the industry. And she shares a lot of just really great sound wisdom around legal aspects. So that should be there for you sometime later today. The other piece that I wanted to make sure that I mention is next week we have our resistance archetypes call. They're all my favorites, but the resistance archetypes really is one of my favorites. We're going to be going deep. As a reminder, hopefully it's on your calendar. That's a 2-hour call, not a 90-minute call. I usually do it in 90 minutes, but last cycle, it's just there's so much in it. I decided to make it longer just so that we could have some more time for processing. So we'll be together from 1 to 3 Eastern next week. I'm really looking forward to that. And then just the last little housekeeping piece, I just wanted to, I think I've thanked you each individually, but just as a community, I just really wanted to thank everyone here who has shared about the next cycle of Sacred Depths with your friends and your colleagues, and who shared about Art of Client Transformation. I so, so appreciate it. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much. A number of your referrals have stepped into the next cycle of Sacred Depths, which is starting in July. Thank you. And we will also send out some more formal thank yous as well. Okay. So, as I started saying a couple minutes ago, logistics and systems are actually more deeper or meaningful than you might think. There's so much more than simply the document that is the scheduling email or the contract or the welcome packet or the progress. And we'll get to those logistic pieces and look at those details today, but before we kind of look at the logistics around all of it, I want us to kind of understand the bigger concept behind creating, and it's not just creating, it's executing and upholding logistics, systems, contracts, templates. All of these things are really about the energetics of holding a strong and powerful container for the coaching or the client relationship. They're really about the energetics and the container. And if you remember back to our very, very first call, where we started to look at energetics, part of the fiber of aligned energetics in the client relationship is creating and maintaining a strong container. The container, if you remember, hopefully you do, is what helps promote trust, vulnerability, appreciation, motivation, forward movement. Okay, so then how is it that something like a confirmation email for a session or a welcome packet can help create and maintain a powerful container? Because each of these things create clarity and confirmation around expectations in the relationship for both the client and the practitioner. Each of these things create clarity and confirmation around expectations. So for example, we're going to be meeting at this time. The investment is this much. This is how you reschedule. You know, all of those things, they create that clarity. And when there's clarity of expectation, it's easier to settle into a sense of safety. It's easier to feel that there's that container around you, holding you. Think about it. When you know what to expect from someone else, and when you know what is expected of you, that's when you can settle in more. You can relax. You don't need to worry so much. Is she going to be there for me in this way? Or isn't she going to be there? Am I supposed to show up in this way? What's expected of me, right? When there's those shared understandings of expectations, there's more of a sense of peace and safety and reliability. But we don't only want to set those expectations in the beginning, we want them reinforced throughout the relationship. You know, and I'll just share, and Sonia just put in the chat, I want to do that with personal relationships too. You know, it's so true. This isn't just about client relationships, right? This is about so many of our relationships. When John and I are clear on what the expectations are in the household, there is so much more peace and love and understanding and safety between us. For many, many years, I was a wedding officiant. I married people. I helped people create out of the box wedding ceremonies and helped prepare them for the union and then officiated. And one of the kind of, I did a number of like trademark things that were really, really meaningful for couples. But one of the things that we did is when we were preparing for their union, for their wedding, we spent a lot of time getting clear on what is this marriage about? What do you expect from each other? What are the agreements, right? And of course, those are subject to change as you move through time. Same sometimes in a client relationship for sure, but that clarity really helps create such a stronger container. Or you can think about if any of you have been around small children, because some of this is about not routine really, but a little bit like routine. And like I said, expectation, your toddlers thrive on knowing what's next. This is the schedule. This is what we're doing. They can settle into the sense of safety when they know kind of the agreements and the rules. I was once on a sales call. I was the prospect, not the practitioner. I was once on a sales call with a healer that I was considering hiring. And we had a short conversation. And then she said, you know, the program is $1,200 and it's 7 weeks. And would I like to buy? And there was no way that I could step into a container like that. It didn't feel safe. It felt risky and vague. There were so many unknowns. How many sessions were happening in those 7 weeks? How long were the sessions? What did she think we could complete over that amount of time? Was there homework? You know, I needed more of an understanding of what that container was, what was required of me, what was required of her. So starting off powerfully with shared expectations, even though it's like the, you know, the business, it enters the container. It's part of the work with the client. It's 100% part of it. And starting off powerfully can make so much of a difference. It really is that container setting. When you're working with a client and the container starts to get set and created even before that first official session, it's so much more powerful. When you don't have these pieces in place or they're not in place well, either the first session is going to be shaky, and then possible subsequent sessions will be shaky, or I've heard of first sessions not even happening. Somebody signing up, even putting down a deposit, but if you don't have that container set for them to step into and feel part of and sink into and rely on, they may not even show up for that first session. So the more clear you can be from the get-go, the less misunderstandings there are going to be, the less confusion there's going to be, the more structure there will be so that everybody can settle in. The other thing, you know, I know there, because I love structure, like this is kind of natural to me, but I do want to say, I know that there are a lot of people that don't like structure as much as I do, and that is great. And sometimes people can feel their first perspective on structure and clarity is confined by it, right? But what I want to offer to you is thinking about this in a little bit of a different way. Structure isn't about being confining. When you have solid pieces in place, then there can be more flexibility all around it because the structure can hold the magic and the flexibility. So contracts and welcome packets are a very big part of starting off powerfully and setting the container. And we looked at this a little bit earlier in the program, but I just want to review again, and you'll get a resource sheet on this. This isn't exhaustive, but some of the most important things that you want to be thinking about for your welcome packets, for your contracts, to have these agreements with clients. So for example, and I know this is obvious, but how many sessions will you have? Over what period of time will those sessions be happening? How long are the sessions? Is there anything besides session time that's included in the offering, email, Voxer, other types of communication? What's the turnaround time if you're including emails or other forms of communication? That's a biggie, right? Is it that, you know, somebody, a client sends an email and you just respond a week or two later? Or do they know that your policy is 48 hours or 72 or even a week? It doesn't even matter so much how long it is. It has to be what works for you, what supports the client, but you want to be clear on that. Or else a client will send an email. And if they don't know your policy, they might be expecting a response that day or the next day. And then all of a sudden they don't feel safe because they feel that you're breaking an agreement or they're not sure when they're going to hear from you. You, for the welcome packet, for the contract, you want to be thinking about if you include extra, what happens if the client needs extra session time? So, and again, there's no right answer to any of these questions. It's not right or wrong. It's just about being clear and being clear from the get-go. So for example, for my private clients, our agreement is that if there is some kind of an emergency or a moment where they need extra support, I will hop on the phone with them as soon as my schedule allows for it. If it becomes excessive or it's something that doesn't feel like an emergency that it can wait for the next session, you know, we'll wait for the next session. Or if it becomes excessive, you know, we'll talk about it and then possibly add more sessions into the contract, right? But my clients, for me, know if they need something, we can hop on the phone. You want to be clear on what does payment look like? So not just what the payment is, but how do you make payments? What is the payment protocol? What happens if a payment is late or fails? What's the protocol for that? Another thing you want to be clear on is confidentiality. And by the way, this goes for one-on-one as well as for groups. All of these pieces that we're looking at. You want there to be clarity and agreements on what, how do you schedule? What's the protocol for scheduling? And what's the protocol and policy for rescheduling? What's the policy? And then also, how do you do that? This is more of a legal aspect, which I'm not expert on, but just to say, and you'll see it, I'll provide you with sample contracts and all of that. I like to include what the scope of the work is. And so for me, that's letting people know that I'm not a therapist. I'm not a financial advisor. There's like a whole list of things, like what I'm not. I have for my private client contracts and agreements. What do you do if you call and I don't pick up right away? What's the protocol for that, right? Because that can create a sense of not being safe. If a client calls, maybe you're not off your last call or you went to the bathroom, you know, whatever it is, and you don't pick up right away. Oh my gosh, she's not there. You know, I let people know if I don't pick up right away, just wait, call back a minute later, I'm probably in the bathroom. And of course, you know, you'll have your full session time. You want to think about and have an agreement, you know, what if you want to terminate the relationship? And then I really like to put into the welcome packet what my responsibility, aside from I'm giving you this many sessions, you know, et cetera, what are my responsibilities? You know, and I write things like, I will show up for you fully. I will hold your vision with you, right? So like, what are my responsibilities as the practitioner? And then what are the client's responsibilities? Showing up, doing homework, letting me know when they're triggered, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's examples on all of that. All right, so let's pause here. Any questions? Or anything that you want to share, what you're seeing or putting together, just around the container, the importance of expectations, or you know, issues to be looking at in welcome packets or contracts outside of the legal, which you'll get from Gina. Anyone want to share anything or have any cues on that? Sonia.
I have a pretty extensive welcome package with all those information. And one problem I've encountered is that often people either don't read it or fly over it and forget everything. So I have to remind again and again that I don't give advice, that I don't tell them what to do, or yeah, if you have any suggestions about that, that would be great.
And they forget because it comes up in sessions that they've forgotten, or like, how do you know that they've forgotten? How does it come up?
Yeah, it comes up in session that I notice that they're not clear about some things that I assumed I had made clear.
Yeah. So first of all, I want to say it's normal, right? Like, put everything in writing. And I mean, obviously they have to sign a contract. Some people have their clients sign their welcome packets too. But even so, even when you sign, right, it's like, you may not have read all of it, or it went in one and out the other, right? So first, I just want to say it's normal. And there are different places where you can kind of reinforce. So I'll talk a little bit in a little bit about some of the things that I mentioned. Well, I guess I'll just talk about it now since it's coming up. On a first call with a client, I always take 5 minutes. So first of all, I share a lot of the important things, even at the enrollment conversation, right? If it's a program that we're having an enrollment conversation for, I'll share some of the important pieces that might feel appropriate. At a first call, I'll take the 5 minutes of a first client call and go over which the things that, like, for me, are the most important logistics. So I'll often remind people again of, you know, if you call and I don't pick up right away, this, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not there. I'll remind people that I'm there for them in between sessions and that I want them to be in touch with me and reach out. You know, so I have a couple of things that I, you know, that I remind them at the beginning if there's, you know, anything that doesn't feel right that I want to hear from them. So there, you know, I think it's like subject each practitioner knowing what their clients need reinforced, but I do take a few minutes in the beginning of that session. And then I would say beyond that, you know, for particular clients that maybe don't, so there are a couple of things you can do from there. Is sounds like what you're doing is reminding them in the session as it comes up, right? Because it's like some of these pieces are all logistical pieces, but they also have depth to them, right? They're also a coaching, they may be a coaching piece. So even if you share in your welcome packet and you're explicit, I don't give advice. If you have a client, for example, that is patterned to not trust themselves or to use other people as a crutch, that's something you're going to want to work on as a topic together, right? And so you can bring their awareness to, like, I know you understand that this is the protocol and I noticed that this is a pattern. You know, can we look more deeply at it? Because I sense it's not just with me, right? And we'll get actually next week with resistance archetypes, we'll look even more carefully how to do that. So I think that it can also be a coaching topic or a transformation topic that needs more attention and inner work with a client. Is that helpful? Great. Helgi.
Hi. So I have more of a practical question and want your opinion. So I, since last year, I was so used to being in person. And since I've gone online, it's mostly Zoom. Yeah. And I'm realizing I had a phone call the other day with somebody who just wanted to connect on the phone. And I noticed the difference when you don't see the person. And then I actually had a quick coaching call with somebody who's an energy healer. And it was also done like through a service that you call this number, you can record your own call. Like, I've never done that before. Mm. And then you keep your own recording. And I'm finding that there are different ways other than Zoom. So what's your take on that? I'm torn because I don't want to mix them up. I don't know what should I give it up to the client to decide what they want to do, or should I have like be my decision? I don't know.
Yeah, so it's completely subjective. I think the first start with you. What do you feel comfortable with? Mm-hmm. And if you decide that you feel comfortable with both, then you can offer it as a, you know, would you rather? I wouldn't mix them up per client. You know, that would be hard to keep track of. So that's how I do it. So for the longest time, I think I had mentioned to you, like I, to all of you, I didn't even switch over to Zoom until this September. And it was after for classes. And it was after a couple of years of students being like, we love what you're doing, but please, can you be on Zoom? And I was always like, no, I don't want to get out of my yoga clothing. And I'm not doing that. So Zoom is really, like, for me, really new. And it took some time for me to get used to it as a, not a medium, I don't know, as a platform in terms of holding space and transformation. And now I feel really comfortable with it. But what I will say is with client calls, one or two clients requested to move over to Zoom. And so I've moved over there, but the rest are very happy with the phone. I'm happy because I don't have to get dressed and I can walk around my house and move energy. And yeah. So because I'm comfortable with both at this point, I go client by client, whatever they're comfortable
and
with.
And so let's say if it's on the phone, do you use one of those services or do you use your phone?
They call me directly.
Okay.
Yeah. And if they want the call recorded, I put it on the client to record the call.
Got it.
They have whatever technology they use.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Rachel.
Yeah, I just had a question since you brought up client recordings. Do you have anything in your contract about the recordings, like what happens with them or confidentiality regarding those?
So for privates, because I don't record, I don't have anything in the contract. For groups, and you have it for sacred depth, we do have a piece in there around being able to use it for future students. And that's for, I think it's really important if you're going to be using recordings in the future for other groups or using a client recording, you know, for something else, you do want that permission in there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a confidentiality issue too, obviously.
Yeah, but if like a private client wants a recording, like what are your protocols there?
Mine are that it's on them. I won't, I mean, you know, if they can't figure out how to do it, we'll go on Zoom if they really want a recording, sometimes for a VIP day or whatever, and we'll go on Zoom and I'll record it and send it to them. But again, there's no right or wrong way. It's just, I never wanted that logistical piece of having to deal with private client recordings. And then for better or worse, what I'm about to say, yeah, I don't know. I take it or leave it. I don't value, like when I do when I'm the client, I never listen. When somebody provides recordings, I never go back and listen to the sessions. It doesn't feel like an added value for me. So I don't include that, but I'm more than happy if they want to record it themselves.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Cynthia. You there, Cynthia?
Yeah, forgot to unmute. I think you just answered my question. I was wondering why you don't record, because to me it is an added value, but you did just answer it.
Yeah, that's great. That's why I was saying it's, you know, it's very, nobody has ever had an issue that I don't offer recordings.
Yeah.
But if it's something that feels like an added value for you as a practitioner, for sure, offer it.
Yeah. How do people record their own? If
they'll do it on through their phone, like Audio Acrobat or I forget there, but there's different technologies that will get on the phone and they'll say, hold on a second. And they'll type in some numbers and then it's recorded.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Dagmar.
Could you speak a little bit about your protocol for a payment and for fail payment? What is your process around this for group programs?
Yeah, so we always excuse first time because, you know, life happens, things can happen, et cetera. So if there's a failed payment, and I can provide the emails that we use too. It's been a really long time. I'm sure we have them somewhere. So we have a set of emails that we send that are warm. And, you know, the first is just like assuming that, you know, the client didn't even know, you know, always everything with respect and treating the other with respect. It's just like, hey, we noticed that the credit card payment failed. How would you like to pay, you know, and when, what date kind of thing. And then if it's not resolved there, I think there's one or two other email templates that we have. But if it goes on for a couple of weeks, Sarah or Talia will get on the phone with someone and find out what's up. When I, for many, many, many years at the beginning of my business, you know, I was originally taught like someone fails on a payment and then that's it, you're done. End. But that to me is not like what I've really kind of seen is like, it's not a gracious way of being because pandemics happen, people die, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So what we will do is work out a different payment plan with the client that feels
if they are financially struggling.
Yes. One that allows them to continue with the work and one that feels an integrity for us also as a company. And then we'll move forward with that new payment plan, even if it goes out a bit longer.
So in, let's say one of your team members has the conversation with client like that, they are on the call and let's say the client is financially struggling. So how would you ask, would you sort of frame it in a way, you know, in order for us to sort of stay together or for you to continue in this program, you know, what feels doable for you? What exactly. Can you step into financially?
Yeah. What feels doable for you?
Yeah.
And then we'll work it out. And then, you know, we'll also sometimes say, you know, can we check in a couple of months if things have changed, you know, to go back to the original or whatever. So it's not necessarily forever. But again, you have to decide if that feels good for you. For me personally, it feels gracious and then it ends up as a win-win for everybody.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, these are all such great questions. Let's continue. There's still a lot I want to take a look at today. Okay, so sounds easy enough. These are how many sessions, this is the payment, this is the refund, all the things that we looked at, right? Sounds pretty simple and easy. But the truth is that it can often feel really hard and really heavy for the practitioner. Either when you're first starting out with a new protocol or when you know it's time to revise things because your boundaries have shifted, it's, you know, what's working isn't working anymore. Or it can sometimes feel hard when it comes to enforce some of the things if a client isn't showing up for their responsibilities. And all of that difficulty around setting and holding the agreements, if there is difficulty, it's related to having healthy and aligned boundaries. A lot of the time, it is related to our boundary work. So I can tell you like 10 different stories around how I've struggled with this in the past. I will for right now just share that when I was first starting my business, each of these things felt hard for me. I went over sessions all the time. I would give tons of extra time, not in the way that I was describing earlier, where it's like giving from because it feels good and it's not out of integrity for me, but it was like out of integrity giving. I remember, and this says like how long I've been in business and how old I am. I used to get paid in checks, you know, like I remember when I finally moved from, or in cash. I remember when I finally moved from, you know, I just can't collect all the cash and the checks anymore, to I'm going to do credit cards. I had massive anxiety that people were going to think I was corporate and, you know, they were going to be charged every month. You know, they were going to hate me. I mean, I could tell you stories about my anxiety, right? And my boundary issues. So if you've got any of them, I share all of this to just normalize it, to say it can happen to the best of us. We could do a full, you know, 3 sessions on boundary setting and boundary holding, all around what I like to call the warrior archetype. There are other pieces that I want to look at today, but I do just want to spend a couple of minutes looking at boundaries and the warrior archetype, because I think it will be helpful for you. And also our clients have, you know, we always do, you know, boundary work with clients. And so some things I think that will be helpful all around. So the reason why I like to look at boundaries through the lens of the, we call it like the healthy warrior archetype, is because the warrior, you think about the warrior, and you can even think about warrior poses in yoga. They're not, the healthy warrior is not overly aggressive. The healthy warrior is not out for blood. The healthy warrior does not want to hurt others. What the healthy warrior desires is to have a boundary. And if that boundary is crossed, that's when the warrior moves forward. The warrior respects themselves and also respects others. The warrior knows what their best boundaries are and upholds them in ways that respect themselves and others. So take a moment and just note for yourself briefly, in your business, with your clients, or even in your personal life, where are a couple of places where you might struggle when it comes to setting or upholding boundaries? Yeah, Anika, last week was very intense. So where are some of the places where you struggle? Just make a note of that. With boundaries. And then what's the impact of that, inner and outer? What's the inner and outer impact of the struggle with setting or upholding boundaries? Cynthia's saying overgiving, it's a biggie. What's the impact, inner and outer? Another moment with that. Dana, did you want to share something, Dana?
I did, actually, and I kind of have a question on this. So I have a client who takes a long time to answer questions. Like, it takes her a while to really feel into what's happening, that sometimes we don't have a breakthrough till like the last you know, it's like it takes a while to get there. And so I'm going over a lot with her, sometimes to like a half an hour or so. And I started to get really clear as to how much my energy was just drained, and I was starting to feel really resentful. Yeah. So I did set a clear boundary, you know, in that, and just explain to her, like, I'm, you know, I want to be an example for you as well, you know, and this is a boundary that is important to me. And, you know, just in terms of me, so it worked for a few weeks, but it's not her fault, you know, that it takes her a while.
It's such a good question. I'm so glad you're bringing this forward, because again, this is like, this is a break with traditional coaching where it's like, everybody should take this amount of time, you know, and so on and so forth. Right. So you're right. Like, it's not that like at the end of the call, she's like, wait, hold up a second, and then brings, right. And even then it would be on you to hold that boundary, but this is more her natural rhythm of processing and feeling into things. And it sounds like this particular client naturally needs more time, right? But if you just give her, if your, let's say your sessions are 45 minutes, but you just keep on going over, of course that's going to be a drain for you because the agreement was 45 minutes. So tell me how this lands for you. You know, my suggestion for a client like that is to shift their session time.
Yeah.
So I have a client who's very much like that. And also just the way she likes to strategize is in a different pace. My sessions are normally 45 minutes, but with this client, we have an array of 1 hour sessions and sometimes 2 hour sessions. Mm-hmm. She pays accordingly for it, but that is just, it's a rhythm that really, really works for her. So you could double up on sessions with this client. So she doesn't have to pay more. It's just that they're happening together, or you can reset the agreement. You know, it could be you are okay with giving her at least through the end of this cycle, an extra 15 minutes on every session, but there's that agreement on that. You know, there's lots of different ways you can play it, but you do want to take people's process time into consideration. We can't always know that ahead of time, you know, is that helpful?
Definitely help. Yeah. Yeah. I've been in situations where I worked with someone where it was like, okay, we're done 72 minutes. And I'm like, wait, but I know I also respected her for having that boundary.
Right. Know? I mean, there's both. It's like have the boundary, but then there needs to be some flexibility, not over giving or draining, but it's a resetting of agreements or creating new agreements. If no, that's like that.
Better. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Anika.
Hi. I wanted to share just a short part of what happened last week, because it really portrays these two questions that mm-hmm. you spoke about. Figuring where to start. Okay, so I had the lesson Friday, Saturday before, not this one gone. And then I got the exam, I call it the life exam. And I had a student staying in my place. And I had told him before that I would like him to leave before the kids come back. And I told him the Monday, he was still there. He didn't tell me anything. And Monday night, I asked him, so what's going on? He's like, oh, well, I didn't find a place to stay. And they told me I might get something next week or by the end of the week. I'm like, okay. Tuesday, Wednesday, I blew up. I blew up with the kids. I blew up with him. I blew up with everybody. And I was like, because I asked for things and they weren't giving. So I had to, I went for a walk, came back 15 minutes later, did my session. And then while I was talking to a friend, I realized, nope, this, I can't do this. And I got the courage to set the boundary. So I sent him a message saying, I want you out by Friday. Mm-hmm. And the minute I sent him that message, I started getting clients because I wasn't getting in that week. Everyone would cancel. They would cancel. I'm like, okay, something is not aligned. And yes. The frustration was
Yes. Yes. So first of all, I'm sorry you had that experience, but it sounds like you really learned the lesson in a beautiful way. So I really want to like honor and celebrate that. That's amazing. And I love that you're sharing this right now. It's a beautiful segue into looking at why we have trouble setting boundaries. So we're going to get into that, but I will say one of the pieces we're going to look at is that when there are, well, there's lots of different ways to put this, but boundaries and anger are very much related. And anger is the antidote to like boundaries that are not being set well, and boundaries being set well is one of the antidotes to anger. And we'll look at that a little bit more deeply in a moment. So perfect, perfect segue. Thank you. All right, so why do we have trouble setting boundaries or upholding boundaries? So we looked at this, we started to look at this a little bit in our first class on energetics, but I want to go a little bit deeper now. So there are a couple of reasons why we may have trouble setting boundaries. And look at a few of them. So number one, if you're someone who is skilled at overgiving, chances are that you are also someone who pretty consistently takes over responsibility for others in your life. If you notice that you overgive, and when I say by overgive, I don't mean like underdeliver, underpromise, overdeliver in a way that feels good. When I say overgive, I mean in a way that's draining or makes you angry or resentful or frustrated. If you're skilled at overgiving, you probably also pretty consistently take over responsibility. Taking over responsibility means, for example, that you don't think your partner will really be able to take care of the kids or take care of them well. So you give more of yourself to take care of them. Taking over responsibility means that you don't really think your clients are going to do the work that you assigned them to do. So instead you spend a lot of time on email and checking in on them over and over and over again so that you quote unquote make sure that the client is moving ahead. If you look at overgiving in this way, it kind of looks a little bit like overgiving and over responsibility have a little bit to do with needing to be in control because you don't trust other people to take care of things or get things done or take responsibility for themselves. If you recognize the tendency to take over responsibility for others in your life, and we looked at this already a little bit, but I want to look at it again. I want you to consider what I'm going to say next. By taking over responsibility for others, you're actually not helping them. You're not helping them. On the outset, you might think that you are, but truly, if you consistently take that over responsibility in a way, you are playing God. And kind of taking on a responsibility, you're robbing your client or others of the opportunity to step up to the plate, to develop themselves, to feel good about having and holding responsibility. I have had clients in the past that have ended up using me as a crutch because I took over responsibility and then they didn't really learn it for themselves. They moved forward, they did, they got results, but they on a deeper, more important level, they didn't learn how to take responsibility of those tasks and those goals and those projects for themselves. So for a moment, consider if this is going on for you. this might be. And also, has overgiving, if this is something that's really like dinging for you, is overgiving an unconscious way of loving others? Do you use overgiving as your way of loving others? Sometimes that can be a family code. This is how we love, by sacrificing ourselves for you. So it's good to, we won't go too deep into that, but you know, if this is something to look at, if you know this is good for you, you know, this is resonant for you. And also to think about, how does this show up, the overgiving show up for clients? That's not the only overgiving, control, like all the pieces we just looked at, isn't the only reason for having poor boundaries. Here's another reason. Sometimes we have poor boundaries or we overgive because we're scared that we'll be alone or unloved. Sometimes we overgive, we don't uphold boundaries because we're scared that we'll be alone or unloved. I think a lot of times for entrepreneurs, when they don't, kind of stick to session time or let clients reschedule last minute, you know, over and over and over again without resetting that agreement, there is this fear of being alone, right? The client will leave if I uphold this boundary or unloved. One of the core wounds of the undeveloped warrior is this, that you fear you'll be alone if you aren't overgiving. You're scared that your clients won't want to buy from you, or that your friends will leave you, or, you know, whatever it is. So even if you think of yourself as a super independent person, are there areas in your life where you're not upholding boundaries because you're scared of being alone or unloved? Take a moment with that. Are there areas in your life where you're overgiving or not upholding boundaries because you're scared of being alone or unloved? Yeah, Cynthia is saying she relates, right? And so this is another thing to be on the lookout for with clients as well. Not only in terms of their relationship with you, but as issues come up in their life around boundaries, right? So this might be something to work with them to create awareness around and look at more deeply. A couple more reasons. You might have trouble, or individuals might have trouble with boundaries. Next one is that you're scared you're not good enough. When we don't feel good enough, sometimes we overgive. This has happened to me before on a personal level, fear of not being a good enough mother. Then it's really hard to get more childcare, right? I need to do it all myself because I haven't been good enough. You know, if you're scared that your service isn't valuable enough, then it's harder to end a session on time because you want to prove yourself, right? Like, you're not going to end the session until you prove that value, you get the breakthrough, you know, like whatever it is. So take a moment and consider that. Are there places where you're overgiving because of not feeling good enough? I'm all about over-delivering, but there's a difference between over delivering for the sake of, how do we want to call it, like really supporting clients to receive results versus this more draining way that's about proving ourselves or fear, you know, any of these fears that we're looking at. Okay, one more. I know I'm moving pretty quickly here. We'll take a break after this one. So the last one, what Anika brought up, a reason why we might have trouble with boundaries or upholding boundaries is that we're either scared of another person's anger or our own anger. In general, in society, we aren't taught how to express healthy anger. We're not taught that anger is not a natural emotion that can come up for people. And instead, we're taught in subtle or not so subtle ways to ignore it or avoid it or be really scared of it. And the truth is, when you ignore it or avoid it, it gets bigger and bigger, and that's when it does become scary. The majority of examples in pop culture that deal with anger illustrate it as a terrible, overwhelming emotion that ends up killing, destroying, hurting. And of course, that's one possible expression of anger. But truly, that's a last resort reaction when anger isn't dealt with upfront and properly. But most of us don't realize it, and then we come to fear it. But healthy anger, when we are in healthy relationship with our anger, that's when we can set healthy boundaries. It's what allows us to set healthy boundaries. And then it doesn't have to get out of control in that, you know, lower level energy or dangerous way, because it's being used to set the boundary and uphold it. All right, so let's pause here for a moment. You know, I just shared a lot, these different reasons around boundaries, you know, why it's hard to uphold boundaries. Anything that anyone wants to share, anything that's coming together for you as we're kind of dip into this boundary work that feels important to share. I feel like there's at least one share out
there. I'll share again.
Okay. Great. Dana and then Wendy.
Yeah. No, I was just, as I'm listening, I'm just looking at where I am holding boundaries and where I'm not. And then like a flash in front of my eyes showed up of the role models in my life and how it's so hard as I feel. And then maybe it was just because I had these role models, but also, or I didn't have a role model for this, but I see it a lot within the feminine, you know, not the greatest examples of holding boundaries. So this has been a real edge for me within my process. And I do notice the more I feel my energy drained or resentment come up or those things, but I do still have difficulty when it comes to people close to me or friends or because they don't have that language, right?
100%. And that is another, you know, like cultural messaging, you know, like it's not ladylike to,
right,
hold a strong boundary or to express anger or, you know, whatever it is. So 100%, we need to be the role model.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wendy.
Hi, thank you for this. I'm just reflecting on how when we talk about it this way, it's very much makes sense. But when we're in relationship or we're coaching and we it's so compounded, you know, so somebody we're dealing with doesn't have good boundaries about this. And if my boundaries aren't very good about something, how everything, it's really easy for things to kind of get to where, you know, it's so draining or it's so, and sometimes it's hard to see all the parts. I just wanted to bring that up because as part of it's our own, part of it's not our own. Does that make sense?
100%. You're absolutely right. This is not like this is, you know, there is something to it. And that's why this is a practice too, right? Of asking, where am I overgiving? You know, where am I giving that feels really good? Where am I giving that doesn't feel good? So, and then for those places, why am I giving, right? It might be one of the reasons I just mentioned. And then what is, what will bring this more into balance, right? And then, you know, from there, there might be, you know, another piece, but ultimately then you'll get to, and so then how do I want to set this new boundary or this new agreement, you know? And so it is a process, and it's one in the moment that we can't see, but if we can take a step back and kind of look at the pieces, no perfection ever, and it can, you know, come up. It's something we have to keep on working at, right? But that's how we do it. We chip away at it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're bringing that forward. Anika.
I want to share two things. What I learned about my anger so far, if I feel angry, it's either, it's showing me where a boundary is needed that I didn't have before, or that my boundary is blurry and that person is therefore testing the boundary, mm-hmm. or the person crossed a boundary. And the other thing I want to share is that I realized as well that with men, I have to set even harder or firmer boundaries. Mm. As opposed to with women. I don't know if you can, if you've noticed that, or if you can share anything about that. It's a bit frustrating that I have to be so firm with men for them to get the point.
I mean, I would put the question back on you, you know, why do you sense that so for you?
It seems like if I don't like physically go no, they keep trying and they keep trying and they keep in and trying to get there. Whereas a woman, if you go, no, I'm not really into that, they don't necessarily insist, you know, and you could just say no or find another excuse. And with men, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I'm always hesitant to put labels, like gendered labels, because my husband is the exact opposite. Like I roll over him. I'm like the dominant alpha in the relationship. He will bend to my every request, you know, and more so. There may be some, you know, generalities out there for sure. Like I don't want to take that out of the equation. And I wonder what the, trying to think of a good like question to ask you around like the men that you attract into your life, and maybe clarity around getting maybe more clear around the types of men that you're attracting in and what your boundaries are with them. And again, it's not all on you, you know, different people, all right, men, women, anywhere on the gender spectrum. I hear what you're saying, and also I don't want to make generalization.
Yeah. But it feels like they're masculine because a man, I guess they have more masculine in general, not all men. It's very clear for them when a no is a no. And as not all women, we tend to not be as clear, fully clear about our no. So they can feel that, and they feel that there is this, oh, there's a bit of leeway in here. Maybe I attract masculine men.
So I think you're getting somewhere important here, right? Because tell me if I'm getting this right. What I'm hearing you say, Anika, is that you know sometimes you're not clear on your nose. That's the place to lean into for yourself. Okay. Yeah. And why you're not clear, you know, do some journaling on that. So identify the places where you're not clear on your nose. And then why? What's the fear around being clear on the no in those situations?
I think it's because I don't say the word no.
Ah, okay. That's so I would love for you, if it feels valuable, for you to do a little bit. I mean, maybe now that you've said it out loud, you can just start saying no, and that's great. But if you feel like there's more there, do some journaling on why. Why don't you say no? What's the fear or the belief that holds you back? Not to process right now, but for you to do some journaling on that.
Can I share that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's what I worked through last week. Mm-hmm. And what came up was that I never had the opportunity to say no growing up. It was not allowed. So I never learned to enforce boundaries because I had no boundaries to enforce.
Yeah. Okay. I have some ideas for you on this. So number one, this is a surface thing, but I shouldn't even call it surface. It's a little bit of like a cognitive behavioral thing, but it can really help. I want to challenge you. Tell me if this feels like a good challenge to take on every day to say no at least once. I want you to look for opportunities in your day to say no, like a real in integrity no. I want you to practice that every day for a while. So, yeah, okay, I can tell by how you're chuckling that will be good. Beautiful. So that's one piece. And then another piece that might be helpful is pick the person from your childhood that you wished you could have said no to and write a letter that you won't send. It's just for you saying no to all the things. Needed boundaries. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're so welcome. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay. Let's keep on going. So I want to. Couple other pieces I want to make sure I share. I want to do you'll get a resource sheet on this, but I want to just run through some materials that are helpful to have. So first of all, before the first session even happens, I may have mentioned this one before, but even if you're doing sales conversations, once somebody says, yes, I want to step in and you get their information, I like to start setting the container right then and there. And the ways that I do that is, number one, I explain what's going to happen next. So first, you know, we celebrate, yay, you know, all of that. And then from there, I'll share, okay, so what's going to happen next is I'm going to take your payment information. We're gonna put it through. You'll hear, Talia is my client care coordinator. You'll hear from Talia within the next 2 days. She'll help you schedule. She'll be sending a welcome packet. You know, so I kind of, it's like setting the container, getting them excited, walking them through so that they know that container is tight, right? They know what's happening next. Another thing that I like to do is schedule our first session before we get off the phone. The reason, again, for container purposes, the reason why I like to do it is like, and we already have that on the calendar, right? They'll schedule the rest out with Talia, but we've got that on the calendar. We know when we're starting. We've got an agreement there. I think I've mentioned this before. I like to schedule out all sessions beforehand. You don't have to do it that way. I like to, again, for the container. Now, of course, we can reschedule as need be, but I find that I don't have clients that go over the 6 months or the, I hear that a lot, like sessions went over, it was only supposed to be 6 months or 12 months. That doesn't happen with my clients. I don't end up with big gaps where people, where clients fall off the face of the earth, because we have those sessions set up beforehand. I recently hired a business coach. The way she does it is at the beginning of every month, you get a templated email and you schedule your sessions for that month. That's kind of cool too, if you're not someone that wants your whole year scheduled out. But my guess is that she does probably have a few like flips because of that. But you do what's good for you, but just to be thinking about, how is that scheduling going to happen? I like to tell my client on that, once they've said yes, as part of what's happening next when we talk about scheduling. And I'll also mention this to Talia so she knows how consistent I think their sessions should be. So for example, if I think that they should be setting up sessions for the first 2 months, every 2 weeks, and then move on to every 3 weeks, they shouldn't go more than, right? Like based on what they've told me or what I know, don't have 4 or 5 week gaps in between, because then sometimes people can do that too. There's like big gaps, right? And that doesn't serve. So we look at consistency. As we said, I'd like to have a welcome letter. Welcome letter is about and you'll get templates for all of these things, by the way. You'll see how I do it. Welcome letter is about agreements, like we spoke about, but it's also about a celebration, an affirmation of the choice that they've made to work with you. I like it to like feel a little bit special. It's not just like these are the logistics, but I'm so excited. And that affirmation contract. Again, I don't give legal advice, but I've already shared in the member center just an example of my contract. Gina talks about that in her call. So take a look at that. As part of the welcome letter, I also include a welcome questionnaire. I like to think of like the work is already even starting there. And it's kind of fun to put together a welcome questionnaire. Think about what is it that you want to know about this client? And some of it is logistical, right? It's sometimes clients who work with clients like say to me like, oh, but I don't have their phone number. Email address, but right, you need like certain things. I like to find out if the person has a partner, what their partner's name is, if they have pets, what their pets' names are, they have children. That way I have that familiarity. Like that's logistic, right? But I know what their spouse's name is if they have a spouse. Thinking about goals, I like to ask. You'll see my example about their strengths and their resources. It's good information for me, but remember back to our creating awareness module on celebrations. It's an opportunity for them to celebrate and honor and acknowledge from the get-go who they are, what their resources are, what their strengths are. I really like to ask in the welcome questionnaire, how can I best support you? What's the best way to call you out? How do you like to be held accountable? So you can have a lot of fun with those. So that's before. You'll also get in your member center my templates for scheduling and rescheduling, and you can adapt them for your own uses. As you all know, I've already shared with you, I won't go over it here. I like for clients, if they can, to fill out a progress report before each call. it's a great way for me to get information about them, for them to prep for the call, do some inner work, do some celebrating, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes, I don't always do this, but sometimes I'll include either a halfway, like a midway program call or a midway progress report. That's like, you know, in the middle of the, if it's 6 months at the 3 month mark, if it's 12 months at the 6 month mark, for us to assess either just by filling out a form or having a special extra session where we look at, okay, how are things going so far? What's the progress that's been made? We're obviously always looking at that. I'm always tracking every session, but it's kind of like a more formal way to say, okay, this is the progress that's been made. Let's celebrate what's been achieved. This is what hasn't worked so well. This is maybe how we want to tweak working together. These are the places where we really want to focus on in the work. Sometimes it can be nice to have that. I don't always do that, but sometimes I do. And then you want to process some kind of protocol for at the end of the 6 months, the 12 months, the group program. Our very last training call for Sacred Depths, I'll take you step by step on how to do a next steps call with clients to support them to, there's a whole process to support them to really integrate all of the work you've done together, and then also invite them into the next if that's something that you want to do. But you do, just for now to be thinking about, you do want to have some mechanism to invite people to continue working with you and to integrate. And even if you don't want to, like, how are you wrapping up, right? Just like in sessions, how we start is important, and also the end of a session is important. Same with a full container of 6 months or, you know, whatever, how you end is important. All right, I'm gonna share one other piece and then we can open up for questions. Client care is part of the container. Client care is part of the container. It's part of the relationship. Whether you're doing your own client care, you have somebody on your team doing it, doesn't matter. It's part of the relationship with the client and it has an energy to it. It's part of the energetics. So when we talk about all of these different agreements, it's not just the transactional, like this is the agreement. But it's also what's really important is the how. How are you upholding the agreement? What's the energy, right? So, you know, for example, if a payment is missed, like Dagmar asked, how are we bringing that to our client's attention? What is the energy of it is so important. What's another example? And again, whether it's you or if you have a team member, you want to verse them in this. If somebody reaches out to reschedule, Talia doesn't just answer like, okay, here are dates for rescheduling. I'm so happy. I'm so glad you reached out, right? This is our energy. This doesn't have to be your energy for your business. So glad you reached out. So happy to help you reschedule. Here are some dates, right? The how is important because it carries an energy with it. Just like your words and what you say in a coaching session carry an energy with them. Other parts of client care to think about that are important, are you following up? If you've told a client you'll follow up with them, are you actually following up with them? It's easy not to. I have to write it down. If I tell a client that I'm going to follow, or else I forget, you know? Client care, in my experience, is a big part of client experience and client happiness and client satisfaction. People tell me all the time, like they're so impressed how me and my team hold them and support and meet their needs. And that's like not to be taken lightly. It's not just good for business, but it actually, if client care is neglected, it can eat away at the container of the client sessions, right? Because a client brings resentment in, et cetera. There was one other thing I had wanted to share and now it just flew out of my head. Oh, just last little tip, random, but I know somebody always needs to hear this. If you are on this call right now and you're like, oh my gosh, I've been going over time with all of my clients. How, what am I gonna do? Here's what you do. Or if you've been allowing people to reschedule last minute, you know, like 5 minutes before, you know, here's what you do. You write a letter that you're going to send to all of your clients. And obviously you blind CC them, but the letter is like, dear clients, right? And you say like, I have noticed that over the last month, across the board with so many of my clients, I've been going 15 minutes over session. And you know, I've done that because I you know, want to serve in the best ways possible. But what I really see is that at the end of the day, it's not really serving you and it's not really serving me. Of course, every now and again, if you need extra time, I'm happy to give it. But I also want to be a role model for you in terms of holding boundaries. And also, I want you to have knowing when our sessions are going to end in case you have to go somewhere right afterwards. And so, and from there you can say, and so moving forward, my commitment to you is to stick to our 45 minutes unless we talk about it and it feels necessary to hang on an extra couple of minutes, right? And then that's like us just a beautiful clean way so that a client doesn't feel singled out, you know, it's like across the board. And I will say sometimes, even if it's just one client, I'll just send them that email, but kind of like across the board so that they don't feel any shame. I'm taking responsibility for it, right? Now, of course, if it's a situation where they kind of keep on hanging, you know, like they keep hanging me on the line, we'll talk about it in a session and I'll say like, you know, I know that you want more and I want to give it to you, but this is, you know, we have to end now, right? So that's a little bit of a different situation, but it's more that silent, like I'm overgiving just of my own avail because I feel like I need to prove something or give the client something. Okay, let's pause here. If you want to go deeper with the inner work around boundaries, the homework is to channel a written letter from your healthy warrior, your healthy inner warrior. Ask your warrior what you need to know about boundaries, and then spend 5 minutes writing from that energy. You'll get a whole bunch of templates also that you can use for your own business. You know, adapt it for yourself. All right. We've got some time for Q&A, and also in the spirit of agreements, I'm going to hang on the line because I know there was one or two Q&A questions and I've got until 2:40 Eastern. So if you need to go at 2:30, please go. But I'm going to hang on the line for any cues out there. Before you go, just take a moment and write down what's your takeaway from our time together today. What's your biggest takeaway? And I'd love to hear some of those takeaways and any cues that you have. Dottie.
Hi, thank you. I'm curious. If you ask a client how they want to be called out or how they want to be held accountable and they don't know, how do you help them discover?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So if they don't know, they don't fill it out on the welcome packet, or they say like, I'm not sure, that's definitely something that I'll look at. You know, in a first session, I'm also, if I have any questions about what they've filled out on the welcome packet, I'm also bringing that, you know, to the first session as well. And so I'll say, you know, I noticed that you had trouble with, or you didn't fill out, you know, how you want to be called out, right? And first I'll just, you know, I'll say just something simple, like, tell me more about that, right? And usually that will open up a discussion. They'll start pointing to the blocks, or they feel uncomfortable being called out, or like they wouldn't even know where to start. You know, it really depends on how they'll answer, tell me more. But then just you use your questioning skills, your listening skills. If it's a fear, we're gonna get to befriend your fear in a couple of weeks. But most of the time, if somebody doesn't answer, it's because they've never ever even been asked that question of like, what is the way that feels really good for you to be called out, right? And so just kind of starting to normalize that and then helping them explore what feels good and right for them and helpful. I know I didn't give specifics, but is that good enough for now?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay, great. Trish.
Hi. Sorry, I can't figure out how to raise my hand today. So thanks for saying that. Gosh, back in our one-on-one, you and I were talking about a preview call. And is that what Dottie was just sharing? Is that something you would bring to that first 45-minute kind of set the tone preview call? I really like that idea. I haven't always done it. And I just really like it. So is that something you do with every one-on-one you have, or is that, you know, like your amazing workshops that you offer, the preview calls of like the Art of Transformation, is that the preview into then your larger offerings?
Can you ask the question in a different way?
So we talked about, so when someone signs up, it's, we want to kind of get them excited immediately, right? And engaged and like, hey, let's meet here. And you had said that you offer a preview call. And I was like, oh, and you had sent me something and unfortunately I can't open it. So I'm just curious if you could speak a little bit more to what is in your preview call.
I see. Okay. If I understand what you're asking, the preview call, like for to move people into working with you.
Yeah. So this is a good distinction. No, it's like, okay. So that I understand. It was like the container right after they make the decision. It sounds like it. I think what you meant was it's more of like a logistics call. I think this is what I'm understanding. More logistics to set the tone before you just dive in.
Yes. So, okay. So you don't need a separate, so if it's one-on-one, mm-hmm. all the ways that I mentioned, like at the end of the sales call and then through the welcome packet, and then I spend a couple minutes on that first session setting the tone.
Okay.
If it's a group, there's a lot of pieces to it. Yeah. We'll go through all of them in Curriculum Lab, but if you go back to our very first call, I integrated all of that into our first call. We spent the first probably 25 minutes of our very first call container setting. And now that you know what it is, go back and look and you'll see all the pieces, and literally you can use all of them for group things.
Okay, cool. One other quick question. Are you going to be offering Curriculum Lab anytime in the future?
In the autumn. Yes.
Cool.
All right. We're at 2:30. So of course, if you have to hop off. Tracy, I know that you had a question that you wanted to ask me if you're still here. Happy to answer it.
I am here.
Great.
Let me turn on my camera. Hi there.
Hi.
Hey. I wasn't expecting to ask now, so I gotta get situated. Hold it in my mind. because I was doing something. Oh, okay. Yeah. So the, what I had been asking about. Okay. So I had messaged you about bringing together, it's not related to boundaries though. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just, okay.
Yeah. So everybody, you should know this isn't related to the class. Tracy just had a question and you're more than welcome to listen in if it's helpful for you.
Thanks. Okay. So my question is related to my business focus. So